I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, Internet. It is, welcome, I want to say, to season 231. Yes, I'm going to start there. Welcome to season 231, episode 4 of the Daily Zeitgeist. It's a production of iHeartRadio, and it's also this podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Thursday, April 7th, 2022, which means it's National Burrito Day? Okay, I can get behind that. It's National Coffee Cake Day? I actually really like both of those foods a lot, so this feels right. And also, it's National Beer Day. I'm not, you know, I don't really fuck with beer that much, but hey, two out of three ain't bad. My name is Miles Gray, a.k.a. Good Kid Mad Hickey, because I had mad hiccups yesterday's episode. Apologies for that. That's from Hentron on the Discord coming at me with that one. And let me just get into it. Who's my guest host today? It's the guest host that everybody loves. It's the one that I love. It's the one that my mother loves. Said, wait, who's that person? Oh. Are they on more? I said, Mom, that's Joelle. Anyway, I'll say less. Please welcome the brilliant and talented Joelle Monique.
Hey, I'm so honored by your mom. Tell her thanks. I love her by proxy.
Oh, yeah. She said you can tell she's smiling. She was saying, like, she can hear your...
That's the sweetest.
Yeah. She was, like, sort of saying in Japanese, you could hear the smile in your voice. So, you know.
Oh, my God. I'm so blessed this morning. Thanks, Mom.
Shout out to all moms out there. How you been? How you doing?
Ooh, you know, good. I was able to secure some tickets. I paid way too much. We're going to talk about it later in the show.
Okay.
It's really, really a struggle to get tickets these days.
To, like, what? Like, just... generally to anything?
What else? Multiverse of Madness. But yes, to anything. Like, if you're trying to get content, we'll talk about all about it, but we are being held hostage by these online ticket sales companies, and we demand freedom. We deserve.
Right. Okay, well, thank you. We need to know more about that. We will know more about that pretty soon. But first, let's get to our guest today. This guest, look, we always shout out her tweets, because the fucking Twitter feed is just a fucking inferno of hilarity. So we'd be stupid to ignore some of these hilarious offerings that we get on such a cursed website known as Twitter. But also, their stand-up is on point. You may know their podcast, Young Old Pod, maybe? You heard of it? Maybe, perhaps, even you've seen them at Funnilingus, which they co-host every month. Because I know we've had plenty of comedians who have been on that show, and I know a lot of y'all get out to stand-up shows. Or maybe, again, you just know this person because they're generally, like, all up in it. Wherever I turn, I feel like I'm seeing them in trades or just viral posts, whatever it is. But please welcome the amazingly talented and hilarious Dana Donnelly!
Thank you, everyone. Happy National Burrito Day.
Yes.
Yes.
What's your favorite burrito? Yes.
I like shrimp burritos, weirdly. Ooh, but yeah. I also just like, you know, I like anything. I like everything.
Sure.
Dana, that's not weird at all. A surf and turf burrito is absolutely peak. A little pico de gallo on that bad good. Boy.
I love french fries in a burrito. I love a California burrito.
Oh,
I love tater tots in a burrito, a breakfast burrito. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love Kofax.
Bring it home. Yeah, there's smoked potatoes that they put in the burritos at Kofax.
So good. You know literally what I mean? Incredible.
They even freeze them and ship them out now to people.
Really? Should. That's people deserve them across the world.
It's a little bit, I had it. Somebody was like, oh, I got frozen Kofax or whatever to just have on deck. And I had it and I was like, it's good. It's still good. But there's, you know, obviously when something like a burrito cannot be frozen and then brought back to life.
Yeah.
Even if Evanescence is there to bring it back to life.
So not like happen. A pizza.
Yeah.
Pizza will snap right back.
What's your favorite burrito, Joelle?
Oh, favorite burrito?
Yeah.
Breakfast burrito.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Or... listen, is a chimichanga a burrito? We can get into it. It's a deep fried burrito, which by nature makes it better. I really miss them. I used to live next to a little Mexican restaurant in Chicago that made little mini chimichangas. Ugh, y'all.
Divine.
Oh. This is peak.
You might have to give me that name because I think I might be going to Chicago at the end of the month.
I will. Oh my gosh, you have to support them. They're the best. They're
yes,
so cute.
Please. Yes, please. And also coffee cake. I don't know, y'all. I was one of these weird little kids who, to me, coffee cake at a certain point was the highest dessert I could ever eat.
A black grandma, of course you did.
I know.
Coffee cake granny.
As a kid who was deprived of sugar, desperately deprived of sugar, I loved coffee cake.
Right. Because you look at it, you're like, it's just a bunch of sugar on the top.
It's like the streusel. I used to eat the streusel off the top, and just eat the brown sugar crumble butter stuff. I'm like, that's the shit, man.
Right. Why don't we just have that on a plate?
Literally, give me the streusel. Well, my mom would make it separately. She'd make the streusel and then the cake. And I literally would eat the streusel.
Right. I'm down to just sit down with a big old pot of streusel.
Oh, yeah. If you just give me, brown sugar and butter and, cinnamon mixed in a jar, I'll just spoon it out.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
For
Just it's our new, Nutella. Just put it in a jar. Trader Joe's will start bagging it, and then it's a wrap after that. Well, Dana, we're going to get to know you a little bit better, but first, we're going to tell the listeners what we are going to talk about today. Just talking about, obviously, rent is fucking ridiculous, and no matter what city you live in, but there's some cities where it's even more ridiculous, and just generally need to bring up again why our rents are so high. It's a factor of many things, and human greed does actually factor into it too, so don't be too shocked when you hear about that. And then speaking of overlords, landlords, or other lords in general, Howard Schultz, who, you know, the on-again, off-again CEO of Starbucks, he's back trying to plead with the workers to not unionize, please. And he's doing it in the saddest fucking way possible. So we're just going to drink some fucking 1%er tears in a second. And then we'll talk about just again, the tickets. They're so hard to get. Websites crashing. Joelle is going to catch us up to speed on what the plight of the ticket seekers of this earth. We'll get to all that. But first, Dana, we got to ask you. What's something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Oh, okay. So I looked, and one of the last things I searched was designer children's clothing.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's because I'm always looking for clothing in a size children's 12, 14, because I'm really short.
Okay.
And it's perfect. A little cheaper. So that's what I was looking for.
I was going to say, isn't that aren't you blessed to be able to buy children's clothing, but with your adult taste?
Honestly, I'm not going to lie. It makes it a lot easier. And it's just less competitive. Things don't sell out in a children's 12.
Oh, right. Because there's not hype beasts using bots to buy a size 12 to 14 for whatever. Right. Got you.
You must win on shoes, too. Oh,
My feet aren't exceptionally small. That's the thing. I'm kind of I'm a sturdy girl. So, you know, I got 6.5. So I'm a normal shoe size.
Oh, yeah. You're going elbow to elbow with it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm fighting people for 6.5, you know, for sure.
What's the last hype piece of, fashion that you were not necessarily overtly hype, but something you were really stoked on getting and then maybe you were a little too slow to get?
Oh, well, there's this one designer. I'm being so annoying. There's a designer like called Danielle Guizio, and she sells these corsets, and they sold out really fast, shit. And I couldn't get one.
Wow. Okay, so there's hype corsets now?
There are, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm convinced like all these brands make like 20 of an item so that they can be like, oh, it's sold out.
Right. I mean, I guess that is a good model. I mean, maybe we should try that with a podcast. Be like, I mean, there's only so many downloads available. All downloaded out. And then,
exactly.
But really there's only two. And then right. You do four and then you do six. And then I feel like maybe,
easy way to make demand seem really high.
Yeah. Because I mean, the Nike does that and most sneaker companies do that now. And people are like, is this like
really smart
doing? Yeah, except for bleeding consumers bone fucking dry.
That's true.
Yeah. Joelle, what about you? Was less anything recently you were late to the draw on?
Yeah, Telfar just did in, was it the olive green drop, or I also wanted the roast beef one. Listen, Telfar has me.
Wait, by roast the neck. Beef? It's, that's like a color of
it's a color. It's a color wave they dropped, which is like a pinkish, like a rose
medium
pink
rare?
Almost.
It's like a medium
yeah,
rare
exactly.
Meat.
Exactly.
Oh, shit. They call and that roast
was,
beef.
I don't know why, but I didn't care. At first, I was like, the name. But then I was looking at the color and I was like, I have a lot of things that can match that.
Right.
And I'm trying to expand my purse collection now. So I got the purses to match the sneakers. You know, I'm trying to put it
back
together. I need to get. My brother's organized. He buys the shoes first and then finds a t-shirt that matches.
Yes, I know
the
your
shoes
brother very well.
And then buys the sweaters. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not that way. I'm like, ooh, click, buy. And then I'll be like, what does this go with? And what is happening in this space?
Right.
So it's messy. But yeah, I have my purple one and it's perfect. My purple Telfar. I love it.
Oh, shit. Yeah, shout out Becca dropping Telfar links in the chat. It's
corned beef. That was what it was.
I want to sharing Telfar so bad.
Yes.
Also, like, what a way to find out that your favorite color is actually corned beef, and you just didn't even know the whole time.
Right. Like, and where do you go with that information now? Like, when, you know, you're like, what's your seasons? You know, what's your season? What's the term I'm looking for with fashion? Look, I'm dumb as fuck.
Oh, like, are you a winter? Are you talking about, like, that, like, when people are, like, winter or summers or whatever?
Yeah. Like based on your colors?
Mm-hmm. That's, like, a really, like, 70s, 80s thing, I think.
Okay, that makes sense because yeah. I'm elderly, and the last thing I heard from was, like, a
I'm like, I don't think you were alive when that was a thing.
No, I wasn't, but I remember I had a manager when I worked at Condé Nast who was older and would talk about that stuff, and I was like, the fuck season? I'm like,
yeah, my mom was always talking about like getting her colors done in the 80s and how it made her like not wear certain colors for a really long time. And then she was like, and then I was like, oh, that's stupid.
So anyway, yeah, corned beef. Shout out. I'm a corned beef, I think, too. This is kind of dope. It's like old chewing gum is what I would call it. But that's not.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird thing to say if you're marketing it is like, yo, we could go corned beef or old chewing gum. That's what it's evoking for me, but
hey. Yeah, I'm gonna call it Bubble Yum.
There you go, Bubble Yum 92, just to give it that patina on it, that little aged factor to it. Absolutely, Dana. What's something you think is overrated?
Oh, overrated. Okay, so I was at Universal Studios the other day, and we got
thing overrated.
What? Sorry. No, I mean I like Universal Studios. Hold on, I think I like it. I love Universal Studios, but we got like these like front of the line passes for the first time ever. It's called the Universal Express. And we realized that we like don't like cutting lines. And it just like makes it like we like to chat. Like I like a line.
Yeah, that's true. There is something formative of, you know, your comrades when you're waiting a 90-minute line for
your trauma bonding.
Ride.
And that's important. Yeah.
So what was the experience like when you began to realize it?
When I began to realize that cutting line wasn't that fun, I literally was just like, oh, like I'm excited to come back here and have to wait in line again. That was all. I was like, wow, I'm really missing something without the line portion of this experience.
Sure. Cause doesn't that make the day like just hours shorter when you take out all the waiting time? When you're like, we did everything we want to do and it's two.
Okay. Here's my thing with Universal too. There's like two good roller coasters. So it's like, okay, so now I have to go on these like 10 times each. Like it's just, there's nothing to, what's the point, you know?
Yeah. Wait, so, okay, Joelle, you were like, Universal is trash, and I want to hear this take, too.
Listen, okay, I'm just saying...
Now, before
like,
you start, just know I grew up in the shadow of Universal Studios in North Hollywood, in the shadow of City Walk, in the shadow of that King Kong thing hanging off the side of the building. But go on.
I get it. And listen, from outside, like, driving up, you're like, oh my God, it's about to be lit. Let's go. Like, yeah. Universal. But once you get inside, you're like, is this the whole park? Is this everything?
You're like, no, there's a downstairs. There's a downstairs. Go to the downstairs.
The lower lawn.
Oh, I've been she's been two or three rides and then the Jurassic Park ride from the 70s or the why did you let the OG Grinch set get crispy out there? Y'all don't want to paint that up?
Dude, it is. Whoville is decrepit. Whoville is
so weird that they're still showing it. Like, you take it down or paint it, but like highlighting that like it's a feature is weird.
I think like they've stopped highlighting. I remember them not discussing it on the tour, and I think it goes around who
that's
now.
Good,
because I think they've realized it's too dilapidated and people are like, this is really sad.
Right
But how much would it cost to paint it? It's not a large set. I'm just saying you could make it work.
Upkeep, right?
Even the Jaws part of it, and especially here's the real problem: if you must go to Universal in California, just don't go before you go to the one in Florida. Because one in Florida is so freaking epic.
Really?
Like the Jaws ride down there. Oh my God.
I've never been.
It's an actual park. It's like Disney-sized park. It's Disney-sized park.
When I hear about Florida's versions of amusement parks being so much better than California's, I'm like, why?
Californians are very much like, well, first of all, like, you have to remember, like, Disney built the park here first. And so it's very, like, petite to what we're used to. They've expanded a lot, but because they're in Pasadena, which is an old town, which is very aware of its chokehold on Disney, Pasadena's not letting you get away with shit. They're like, listen, you want to build a garage? Fine, but we're going to talk numbers. Am I on crack? Where is it at? Anaheim. Ugh,
oh, okay.
Sorry. I don't know my small out-of-the-way LA town yet. Anaheim. Anaheim has a chokehold on Disney.
Right.
And they're very much about, like, making sure that it stays looking a certain way. Disney's trying to get some of these older hotels out of the way, but they're like, no, those are local business people.
So,
it's like a whole to-do. And because of that, it's small. When they went to Florida, they opened up in a swamp. Ain't no jurisdiction in a swamp.
Right.
Disney was like, we're just going to build and build and build, and it's fine. We don't have to tear down to bring in new rides. We can just build up a new ride.
And we can also just ignore shit if we don't fuck with it anymore.
Yeah.
That's true. Like, it's abundance there. You can't do Disney or Universal down there in a single day. It would literally be impossible. You couldn't even walk all of it in a single day.
What?
So, I swear you can't. There's too many parks. Because you've got Animal Kingdom. You've got the OG park. You've got Epcot. Which is actually cool because Epcot, you can drink there. So they've got like drinks from around the world.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's so cool. But Universal's down in Florida, like when you get on their like dinosaur rides, epic. They're, when I went, I was little, they still had the Jaws ride, which I think they've retired. But it was like the most, like the shark is in the boat as opposed to here where you're like looking at a small lagoon 20 feet away.
And you're like, hey, that parking cone has teeth. And you're like, oh, that's
a shark. Oh, yeah, there it is. No, the thing comes up on the side of the boat and you think you're going to die. So it's just the levels are totally different.
Okay, so they're doing it in Florida way.
Yeah, the family aspects of like going back every year up here are really cute. I love Disneyland up here. It's very sweet. Like a lot of people are like, this is my second home. This is where I go like, you know, 3 or 4 times a year. But as far as amusement and actual fun, you want to go to Florida.
Yeah, that seems to be the consistent thing. Yeah, and I get it. Universal, there's a, like when you do the backlot tour and you're like, oh, damn, the War of the Worlds thing looks real fucked up still. And they're like, no, that's Whoville.
That's
with the crashed airplane like shit. No, that's Whoville. Oh no, yeah, that's neglect. That we cleaned up the War of the Worlds set a long time ago. When that shit first came out though, the War of the Worlds set, that shit was so clean. I remember being like, whoa, I really feel like now I know what it's like to be on the other end of American foreign policy. But yeah, it was a really cool cool vibe while it lasted. Dana, what's something you think is underrated?
I think like the broad multi-camera sitcom that people on the coast don't watch, but that the Midwest loves. I love like just like the cheesiest, broadest sitcom on the planet. Like, and everybody loves Raymond. Like, I think like, yes. And I obviously those aren't actually underrated. They're like, they are properly rated. They're hugely rated. But like, I think they're underrated in like cool communities. And I really like them. I've been rewatching like 2.5 Men. Obviously, you know, some problematic elements, but.
Oh, what happened? Is everything cool with John Wolfe? Or what's that guy's name? John something? That was the bad guy of the two, right?
Isn't Charlie?
Stop.
What happened with Charlie Sheen?
I don't know.
Stop it.
Wasn't he canceled for something?
Oh my God, Charlie Sheen's canceled.
I don't know. I actually don't know. And I'm just saying things.
I have a lot of signed major league DVDs that I'm going to have to get rid of soon. If he is canceled, that
I actually have no idea. I really don't know.
No, he is. No,
but
he is.
But I love it. So
I'm joking. Wait. So so you're saying the classics? Like you're dusting off the classic sitcom, or do you even see any like what you're seeing now?
No, I'm literally saying like new multicam sitcoms too, like that no one watches, like The Neighbors on CBS or whatever.
Wait, so what's that about?
Exactly, The Neighborhood. It's a multicam with like Max Greenfield and like Cedric the Entertainer. And it's like just the broadest multicam about a white family moving into a black neighborhood. And it's not great, but I'm like, there is something about it that I'm like, it's doing something. It's filling a void.
Right.
You know, it's filling a void that needs to be filled.
Like the way you talk about it, it sort of reminds me of how I talk about terrible Christmas romance films that come out of Hallmark, where it's like, yo, dude, the worse, the better.
Honestly. Yeah. No. Yes. I think like as... The more like multicam, like the more that you could make fun of it for being stupid, the more I like it.
Got it. So, I mean, I guess that's the other thing too. Like there's a comfort in like really predictable, like writing also.
I love a laugh track. I'm like, tell me when to laugh. Tell me.
Oh, okay. Wait, so, okay. What's, if you're going to put somebody onto a sitcom right now, what would you recommend?
Honestly, I'm just telling everyone I know to rewatch Two and a Half Men. And they don't like it. And they're like, stop telling me to watch that.
Skip past the Charlie Sheen of it all.
That's all.
And it's fucking dope. Okay, cool.
Watch Abbott Elementary.
Oh, yeah. But Abbott Elementary is like
that's
good.
That's single cam.
Like, that's like,
yeah.
This is what you're I'm different than what I'm talking about. It's like, yeah, that's yeah. good.
We're talking.
Like, that's not what I'm talking about.
That kind of shit.
I'm talking about like it's like an opiate for your brain. Like, you're literally like, it's like you feel like you're on Xanax. And you're like, you know?
Yeah, I call that, listen, no, I call that depression TV.
Yeah.
I am way into it. My depression TV was Friends for a long time. I don't really like anybody on that show as a human being. Like, not the actors are fine, but like the characters, you know, difficult human beings would not want to live with. But man, something about that show was just like, I'm going to get through the day and it's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. And once you watch a show so many times, now you know the beats of it. And when you can start saying the lines with that,
yeah.
you're like, it's time to get out of bed. I have to go do something.
That's how
else.
It was with The yeah. Office. And I was like the UK and American version of The Office. Mm. I would like sing. I would like, I could like you're saying, you know, the beats of it to the point like, I think I'm just listening to music now.
No. Mm-hmm. The Office is music. I mean, The Office is like, I can do a karaoke to every episode of The Office.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, like A Man on Hinge. I'm like, wow, I know every line of The Office.
See, I don't know what it is about it.
I think it's just
also
good.
Although recently there was that episode where someone took a dump on Michael in Michael's office and on the carpet, and he says this thing where I'm like, I've always been like, you know, since like, you know, we've been more aware of like ignorance in workplaces and more sensitive to it, like especially after 2020, I'm like, Michael Scott rubs me in such a fucking like the wrong way, like it's weird how my relationship to Michael Scott has changed over the years. And I'm like, this motherfucker is the exact problem with all these fucking.
But isn't that the point? Like, I think
it is. Yeah, it is. But I think I shifted to this place of like, I don't know how funny sometimes like even benign ignorance can be to me anymore. But it's like it ebbs and flows because other times I watch it, I'm like, this shit is so stupid. I love it. But so in my mind, like when people always talk about, you know, they always speculate, like, what would The Office be doing now or whatever? I'm like, dude, this guy would be such an alt-right person. And then in the fucking episode, he's like, I love Joe Rogan. He brings up Fear Factor and he goes,
That's pretty much funny. Anything
Joe Rogan does. And I was like, okay, there's Exhibit A for Michael Scott.
I mean, that's who Michael Scott is for sure. I mean, I always think about the episode where he pretends like they have to stay an extra hour because of something corporate wants them to do just so he can like make sure that they all come to his party.
Right,
because
right,
he's like,
right,
well,
right,
I know
right.
that you thought you were going to stay late, so you don't have any plans. So you have to come to my party,
right?
Yeah, and I'm like, that's so funny and crazy. Yeah, that's sick.
And still, no one comes to his party. Or I mean, one of my favorites was Dwight's date to the dinner party that he wasn't invited to. Okay,
Beverly.
Anyway, this is not an Office podcast. We actually have that. It's called The Office Deep Dive with Brian Baumgartner on the network. So check that shit out. Not this one. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
you
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. Rent, high enough for you? Just a quick question. Everybody, no? Good? Good with the rent? Okay, perfect. Let's move on. Look, rent rates have, everybody knows, like, I think anecdotally, they're like, what the fuck is going on with rent? If you're moving places, you're like, the rent has gone up at a ridiculous amount. New Yorkers I know are like, the rent fucking nosedive for a second. And now they're essentially like, with your application for a new place, they also do a little strong arm robbery, hold you at knife point and pat your pockets down. And they're like, all right, thanks. Welcome to the new renter's market. On paper, right? Rents have increased by on average, like nationally, 17% based on 1 year ago. They've gone up 17%. That's when you average the shit out. Other places, it's fucking worse. Austin, Texas, for example, the shit has gone up 40%. Mm-hmm. Dallas, Fort Worth area, up 25%. And I think, again, most people are like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it's not like it's a fucking building. How is the shit more money right now? Is it what is happening? Why are we at the will of the landlords and these costs? Well, when you look at it, there's a few different factors. And I think many people are very sensitive to this naturally because we're at a point in time at the moment where gas prices are ridiculous. Food prices are going up and most people's wages are like stagnant, if not like the opposite of a living wage, like a joke wage almost. Yeah. So
a joke wage, but not funny. It's funny.
Just imagine Congress being like, you could have a joke wage. We understand living wage is no longer applicable. You can't reach it, but living we'll allow wage. You to pay them a joke wage. Yeah. They'll laugh about it. It'll be great.
Here's some. How about a low wage, huh?
Yeah, like low wage.
3 cents an hour. You fuck with that? Ha ha! Joking. Or am I?
Not for prisoners. Oh, that's so, about accurate.
Right. No, I mean, let's... We're all staring down the gun of not being housed unless you work to be a productive member of society, as it were. So you look at what's going on, and depending on the factors you look at, there's a number of explanations. But the biggest thing is that there's just not enough housing, right? One of the biggest things that is factoring into all of this is that there just aren't like appropriate homes available for the kinds of people that need them. So if there's not enough homes to meet the demand, that means there's no fucking pressure or competition from landlords to do anything about it. You know what I mean? Because then they're like, oh, what are you going to do? Like, we're the only few rackets in town that have like a single family housing unit that isn't like $7,000 a month. So guess what? I can set the rate, because if you're not going to pay it, some other person more desperate and maybe with slightly more money than you will pay it. And I get to do my thing. And I think, you know, when you look at how cities overemphasize like luxury high rise condos, like, for example, like L.A., we have less places for people to live that don't descend from like oligarchy. So you mean you have these landlords that have us all by the throat. It reminds me just like the internet service in most places where there's like only two companies. So they're never incentivized to have it fucking work, because they're like, what are you going to do? Go to the other shitty one? Anyway, shout out Spectrum. That's like kind of like the same way it's looking with housing too, where people are looking at, you know, they're looking at people needing housing and sort of being like, well, I don't know. I mean, if you're not going to pay it, someone else will. And this is becoming just an increasingly dire situation. And I think, you know, the other elements to this is that construction has slowed down because the materials cost too much. But this is the other part. Most people, right, because of the pandemic, they are beginning to look at their own like living spaces differently. We saw that, how people began all these sort of like DIY projects at home or trying to make their like home offices and things like that. People want more space, more privacy. And a lot of people don't fucking want roommates anymore if they can afford to not have roommates. So that's also creating just this perfect storm that also allows for human greed to be a bit distorted, or at least camouflaged by these other factors. But yeah, I don't know how much things have changed, if y'all have moved, or your perception of what you need for where you live has changed since the pandemic. But
yeah, we moved January 2021, which was a great time to move. Oh my God. Prices in the basement. A whole bunch of new properties had just gone up, and they were like, how are we going to fill them?
Oh, no, right.
It's crazy. That intense pandemic time.
Right.
And so we sort of felt like we had, you know, our pick, and it was nice because we had all sort of just started making like real people money. Mm-hmm. So long freelance. And it was helpful. We are now moving again for a multitude of reasons, mostly because when you buy a house that goes up quickly, you get real thin walls. Frustrating. So I guess similar to a lot of people being like, we don't want roommates. Like, we just want it to be silent in our own home.
Right. You don't want to hear someone else having nightmares.
No, not at all. You buy a house in like, I've lived in apartments mostly that were built in the 70s. There's like a big boom between the 50s and early 70s in California. And all those houses, super solid. Like, you couldn't hear anything. It was perfect. Now there's a lot of property going up, but not a lot of information available about like when it's going to be finished. I'm guessing that's a supply chain issue. But my right. other concern is, to your point, a lot of it's happening in like single family communities where we're seeing a big gentrification. Gavin Newsom signed a new bill into law late last year, which was like two housing bills that allowed for denser housing on single family lots, which on the one hand seems like a really good opportunity to alleviate the housing crisis in California, more houses and smaller spaces. You know, we're seeing a lot of townhouses go up. But on the other hand, like these communities that have long been, let's face it, predominantly like Mexican are dying now. They're quickly being gentrified. And that's sort of, I don't want to be a contributor to that cause, but I also need a place to live. So it's a difficult out here for pretty much everyone just trying to find a house to live in. I don't know. LA's got a lot of work to do if we're going to resolve this crisis.
I mean, yeah, who should we vote for mayor to make it better? Do you guys know?
Oh my God. I'm no.
Dude, obviously Rick Caruso.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to turn into the Grove. Like, I just want to live in a free people. So that's so much to ask.
Right. No. I mean, you look at most people who like running for mayor of LA, you're beholden to commercial, like real estate developers, mm-hmm. no matter what.
Well, again, like one guy is a developer. It's just like, he's literally a developer.
Yeah. No, it's he's like, hey, you know, all the places where like you almost don't believe that unhoused people don't exist. Yeah, those are all the shopping malls I built because I work me and the LAPD are like fucking this. I actually used to be the president of the police commission. People don't realize that about me either. I'm Rick Caruso, folks. Yeah. And which is funny because most people who have that position for the LAPD commission are typically private citizens or always private citizens, but real estate people, like whether they had a hand in rejuvenating downtown or people like Rick Caruso. It just shows you the relationship between the police and private property. So just beyond this, though, too, like this is all sort of against a backdrop where, you know, so many people's financial situations are tenuous, not even before the pandemic, but even now because of the pandemic. There's this study that was done before the pandemic that said in cities like L.A. where the rent is so high, a 5% increase in rent could drive thousands to become unhoused. That's all it takes. It's fucking 5% to throw everybody's finances off. And we're now in a thing where you're looking in some areas, they're taking, you know, we're looking at an average of 17%. You know, what happens with the regulations around this, we shall see. But I mean, until then, without an emphasis on like affordable housing, like, you know, we can't have people continue to be like, because you see so much of this shit in LA too, where people are like, I just feel like, you know, there's like so many homeless people like around. And like, if there's like, I don't know what to do. It's like, you don't know what to do. Give them housing and advocate for that.
It's not a complicated concept.
Full bore. Yeah. And it's so interesting when I talk to people who seemingly have their head in the right place when it comes to other societal ills, that they're like, okay, they understand about like the proliferation of like police, militarized police and like white supremacy and all this other shit. But then their empathy like stops suddenly for people who are like not doing well. And then it's like, well, I don't know. Like they just shouldn't, like there was like poop all over this like transformer box. I walk the dog by all the time. It's like, I just wish they could just like move them somewhere. But you need to invest in the actual the ideas and the concepts that will alleviate people or alleviate homelessness and not just be like, it's gross and I don't like to see it. If you really care enough, don't just turn it into a thing of I'm disgusted by the reality that people are destitute, because I think that's the thing most people are butting up against. It's like, I don't like the idea of having to acknowledge that like some people could be doing so terribly. And I'd rather just not have that in my like my peripheral vision, because I'm just trying to do my thing. But really taking that and focusing that into, oh, what are the actual solutions to this? And that is affordable housing, or just looking at all the people, you know, the money that we've put aside as a city that many residents are like, oh, we can't have that. We can't have that in my backyard. Not even affordable housing yet.
Well, we're seeing it like even in, you know, I mean, most recently, Dave Chappelle went on a tirade in his own community where he was like, if you build these were essentially Section 8 houses for people, I'll pull all my money out of the city and bounce. And it was like, dude,
what? Yeah,
homelessness is not a crime. And the fact that we criminalize it doesn't make it a crime. Like, we don't have to be afraid of people without housing. That's just bananas.
Yeah. But I think that's reveals the whole, you know, the game there is if you criminalize being poor, then you have to work. Right. And then there's no option but for you to toil, because the only other recourse you have is to become unhoused or not be able to pay your bills. And then, yeah, you'll begin to meet the other part of law enforcement.
That's just such a bananas statement, because I feel like there's not that many people who don't want to work. And I don't mean like, of course, most people most people don't dream of labor. And if they could do something else, they probably
if they could follow
would.
Their dreams, you know?
Right.
But most people have like something they want to do. I mean, like, most people don't want to just like sit around and like be complacent. Like, most people do want to contribute to society. It's just like, in what capacity do they want to do that? It's like,
right.
You know,
it's like, do I want to work at, you know, like work at a quick service like restaurant, or damn, it'd be fucking chill if like I could have a writing career because I'm really creative. I just don't, there's no outlets for that because I'm not in close enough proximity to benefit from like the social networks you need to enter show business. Anyway, yes, these are all things that, you know, you think could be better managed. But yeah, we're still looking at the same situation. And like, I was reading an article from 2014 that was like, why is the rent so darn high? They're still pointing at the exact same problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the the slow boil of progress continues, I guess. Or at least, I don't know. I mean, at least landlords seem to be caked up. Becca said it's up 200% in New York City in some places.
Oh, I mean, there's like TikToks that I see of like people like apartment hunting in New York City. And like there's lines for these overpriced apartments, like lines, like you can't even get one. So it's like, regardless of whether you're willing to pay an insane like amount of money for a really tiny place, it's like you still can't even get it because like literally like 500 people want this to overpay for the same shitty place. Like it's so bananas.
I saw another TikTok of something about like, I think it was in North Carolina or something, like near Asheville, where like this realtor was like, this is a house that's going up for like for to be seen. And it's one of the only houses that's actually like at a price that makes sense for human beings who aren't like, you know, completely like unable to, you know, you're just maybe doing a terrible loan or whatever, but the most reasonably housed or priced house. And they were shooting this TikTok. Dude, the people, I don't know what kind of crowds I've seen like this, like outside, just for people to see an affordable home. And nice. when you see that there's that many people looking for it, go a few levels lower to people who might not even be in the market to buy a house, but to rent a house. And then from there, you have an even, you know, more ludicrous market where you have people being able to set the prices because, you know, whatever.
It's really disheartening to watch, especially when you consider, like, somebody was tweeting the other day about how their landlord was mad because they were 2 days late and the bank like tagged the landlord because their mortgage payment was late. And they were like, so am I my landlord's like head of household? Am I the beneficiary supporting my landlord's lifestyle? That is madness.
I think that's why landlords get such terrible flack, because more people are sort of aware, because there are people who are just straight up landlords who are like, my job is to just collect your wages and then pay for this property. Bizarre. And that's what I do. And then because it's wild when you see on especially on TikTok and Reddit, you got like these pro landlord spaces where people are like, I can't believe people are saying like I'm a dick because I raised the rent 50%. I have bills too that I extract through passively having this property that I may have inherited or whatever. And I get that some people inherit houses and are landlords and you're not trying to fuck people over, but there's damn sure a lot more people who look at being a landlord as the way out.
But there's also like this section of TikTok where it's like literally like it's like how to become a landlord TikTok. Mm-hmm. And like sometimes I'll get them on my page and it's like he's like with like little fun music and it's like this cute like girl in her like early 30s. And she's like, this is how like I make $500,000 a year with 4 Airbnb properties that I put no money down on. And it's like basically trying to get you also to do the same kind of like Airbnb scam. And I'm just
And you know, and why, and you can see why that is attractive, right? Because so many people are like scrambling to figure out how to survive. And right now, some of the examples you'll get on social media are these people who are like young, dressed nice, got all the like consumer items that, you know, someone who's struggling would probably want themselves. And the way that they're presenting their lifestyle is like, the way I did it was to exploit other people's need for housing, y'all. And this is how you do it. Look for some distressed properties. Like, I see those videos too. And there's no real awareness as to what that means. Like what cycles you're perpetuating by getting into this idea of like lucrative landlorderism or whatever.
They're not discussing like, where is this money coming from? And the money's coming from other people who are like working shitty jobs. It's just like, it's so bad.
But now I don't have to work and I have a exactly. Lambo payment. Ow. But yeah, go off, landlords. Speaking of overlords, I want to check in with Howard Schultz, who is the on-again, off-again Starbucks CEO, as I mentioned earlier. And he is, again, he's fighting for his corporate overlord life right now. The historic unionization of a Starbucks in Buffalo was a high point for people who are actually invested in labor rights and equity. But if you're in the C-suite of a publicly traded company, it looked more like when the spaceships from Independence Day pulled up, like where they're looking at that and they're like, they're trying to fuck us up. And that's why we see so much money going into union busting and fucking with people who are trying to organize unions in their workplaces. So he was so concerned, right? He came out of retirement to try and reason with the people, some of these employees in Buffalo. This was back in November when we covered it. There was that clip of him like likening like the unionizing workers to like people in the Holocaust who are sharing a blanket to keep themselves from not dying in the freezing cold. And he's like, and that's what we try and do at Starbucks is share the blanket as a way to be like, you don't have to unionize. Where you're like, I'm sorry, who are the Holocaust victims in this metaphor? Exactly. Oof. What are you saying? So that obviously went to the sound of crickets. Those workers successfully unionized. And, you know, this is like the thing that a lot of people who are, you know, who are OMG afraid of unionizing, they see places like Starbucks that have so many locations that if slowly they begin to unionize more and more, that a company that hires so many people has like such a sort of baseline for what is equal pay, that affects fucking everyone else in the space. That's why you see so much money being poured into it, because down the road, they're like, then I have to make less monies. So when that didn't work, he returned to his post as CEO. And he's been, you know, I presumably because he thinks he can keep the unionizing from happening. And he had another employee roundtable discussion again recently. And my God, this is him getting, you know, we want to get together. I don't see, you're not employees. We're partners. You guys are partners. Even though you don't have any stake in the profits of this place, we're partners, right? And he wanted to just kind of let everybody know all the cool stuff that's happening at Starbucks, basically as a way to sort of say, like, we're going to stop. He said, we'll stop doing stock buybacks and we're actually going to pour that money back into the company through like making better stores, maybe wages, who knows, won't say that explicitly. And just, you know, making things nicer for Starbucks as it is. The people, again, were so fucking bored at this event. That then he goes on to be like, okay, that didn't work. What else can I get these like really poor working people? How can I get them excited about the future of Starbucks? Listen to this fucking pivot.
Okay. How many people have followed what has been happening with NFTs?
They're laughing.
Nervous laughter.
How many people have participated in investing in NFTs?
We're poor, bitch.
How are you doing? Okay, for
one
now.
Guy raised his hand.
Okay. So if you look at, I've tried to be a student with all this, not being a digital native. If you look at the companies, the brands, the celebrities, the influencers that are trying to create a digital NFT platform and business, I can't find one of them that has the treasure trove of assets that Starbucks has. From
Stop
collectibles
it.
To the no. entire heritage of the company.
So, this guy's
so not big. Any entertainment industry with solidified characters, art, stories, way, way backed up has more than, I'm sorry, the drink company Starbucks?
Right.
Sir, you sound like an idiot. And that's just on a business level. Not
Amblin Entertainment as a production company has more exploitable IP
Please.
Than fucking Starbucks. But again, this is what he was saying. He was dangling. He's like, wouldn't that be sick? Like, y'all, like, Starbucks is going to start doing NFTs. How the fuck does that benefit these people? And what the fuck did you think they were going to be like, finally? Because what? He'll pivot to, and you know who's going to get first swipe at those NFTs? Y'all, the partners.
That is, what's wild to me is these, you know, millionaire, billionaire CEOs coming to talk to folks who make 1/120th of their salary a year, you know, and not ever sitting down to actually address these issues, but like talking to them like they're at a board meeting, you know,
right.
it doesn't compute at all to their daily lives. You're not at all addressing their needs or concerns. You're just adding frivolous things to a company that they genuinely don't care about. Here's the thing you need to understand. If you're paying your employee minimum wage, if you're paying your employee $10 over minimum wage, they don't give a shit about your company. They don't care. This is not a family to them. They don't have the time. They came in here to make sure their kids could eat. Okay.
Right. It's from the last story where it would be criminal to not have a job. Those are the
exactly.
stakes. That's why I'm here. Not because I exactly. love you, Howard.
Even if they really enjoy making their little latte foam art, or, you know, this Starbucks is a hub in their community and people come in and use the internet and it, you know, that feels warm and fuzzy to them. Like, even if those things are true, it's still
most likely not their dream place. You know, most of them are not like, oh, I can't wait to open a Starbucks of my very own. Like, they literally just came here to work. And when we make it so that, you know, our jobs have to support our health care, when our jobs have to support us past retirement, then it's important that jobs do those things. Like, yeah. You really can't have it both ways of being like, well, we don't want the government to, like, support people independently. You know, they got to work. But we also aren't going to make it so that workplaces have to support people in a way that is realistic.
No. And please don't unionize and make us have to actually honor those honor that relationship where I'm telling you we're a family. And this is the thing. Even though the NFTs thing didn't fucking everyone laughed at that one. He then just fully takes the fucking mask off and hits people with his assessment of what workers fighting to have stable and life-sustaining wages looks like. Unionizing. This is his unionizing take.
Here's where it gets a little sensitive, because I've been coached a little bit, but I do want to talk about something pretty serious.
Uh-oh.
We can't ignore what is happening in the country as it relates to companies throughout the country being assaulted in many ways by the threat of unionization.
Oh, you can't assault a company, assault. It's not a person.
The literally using the word assault for that is actually truly so absurd.
Assault.
Someone coached him to say that? He should fire
no,
him.
I think he was coached to not say that.
They're like, please don't say this. Please. They're like, oh, we said to avoid the word assault.
and then you ascribe that to... You're saying a multi-billion dollar entity was being assaulted by people seeking equity? Wow.
Like,
wow,
people,
wow.
People wanting to be paid like $5 more an hour. I'm like, that's like, you're crazy. Like,
this is the thing, right? And it makes sense from the perspective of an oligarch like this. If you're used to making obscene amounts of money, like every fucking hour on the hour, anything that fucking threatens that order seems like an existential threat. It's the same shit you saw with white supremacists deal with anything dealing with equality. They treat that shit as an like existential threat. Black lives matter. Oh my God. Then ours don't. You know what I mean? It's the exact same response from someone in a place of, you know, in the hegemonic class or whatever, what have you, to look at this and say, this is fucking dangerous. This is bad. Mm-hmm. But also to not have the wherewithal or awareness to, you're talking to the fucking people that are looking for a better outcome. And you're saying like, I don't know if you heard about these fucking poor weirdos that want to like curb stomp Starbucks.
But that's like the super wealthy have this idea that you have to work your way up from nothing. And they're really repulsed by the idea that people might start off at a balanced place, even though many of them started off like beyond wealthy. You know, like recently I was offered a gig from somebody who's like, yeah, I'd have to bump you down to assistant and work your way up. This person is wealthy their whole existence, born into like family name wealth. And I was like, as much as I appreciate, I guess, the offer to come work for you, I've risen to an executive status. I can't go back to it. I literally could not afford.
You gotta work your way up, though.
I literally could not afford to go back to, and he was like, oh, well, my current assistant can't afford it either, but she really wants the gig. I don't know what to tell you, bro. I can't be your current. I can't do what she's doing. It's a complete unawareness of, like, what it is to just try to survive. But again, these are the same people who, if you ask them, what's a gallon of gas cost? You know, I read recently that you're mostly impacted by the inflation if you make less than $300K a year. I instantly felt called out. I was like, oh, I'm poor. Cool. Great.
Wait, 300K was the thing? It's like, what?
Like, yeah, if you make above 300K, you're not really being impacted by the inflation. And so that's kind of puts into perspective for a lot of people, like, oh, this is the difference of, and 300K is not even touching extreme wealth, right?
No.
That is, it's just hard to conceptualize how people could be so upset about, like, maybe you can't afford your second yacht, but, you know, other people are literally just trying to keep an apartment. We have family every year. I'm like shocked by the idea of families piling into their car because it has air conditioning and just driving around as a means to keep their families like cooled off.
Yeah.
The disparity is just, it's unconscionable to come in and talk to these people and play in their face like this. But I'm glad the internet gets to roast him.
Hold on, NFTs,
but I also think it's like people like him don't know any poor people. Like these, knows no poor people. So it's like
that. But people like that, they will say like, no, I used to be a working guy back in 72.
Yeah.
I was working with this guy, this feller. He came from Laos in Asia. And we were working together shoulder to shoulder, and he told me how much better it was here in the US. And I think about that. How do I give that to my employee? Like, that's like the weird class awareness that these people pretend
to
have. It's like
it's
from
score,
60
Bob.
Years ago.
Not pre-credit.
Not
score.
Not pre-credit score, yeah. Like, yeah. Like fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
I also like, yeah, like you used to be able to like rise up a little higher. It's like now you can't.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's the playing field is so tilted now. It's very hard to know who actually has a head start, because most people look like they're starting from some kind of deficit. But yeah, you know what? Bezos and Schultz, they've poured a lot of money into busting the unions at their respective companies, because, again, that upfront spend of spending millions of dollars now to just prevent, like when you even say, dude, that $4 million would have kept those people from wanting to unionize if you just invested in them. They're like, no, because then I'd have to do it everywhere. If I just do this one $4 million to completely go outside the bounds of the law to union bust, that's better for my long-term goal of making as much money as possible than to have people collectively bargaining for a fair share. No.
Join/ support your local workers' revolution. It's happening. It's among us.
Yeah,
you can
it's
be a
everywhere.
Part of it.
That's the thing. I'm like, you know what? I know they're not liking this, because the momentum is definitely not with them at the moment. It's definitely with the workers. And
the people see they can win. And the thing is, like Kellogg had to find out the hard way, we will just stop working because it's not that much of a difference.
Right.
The wages will just stop. So
they're like, I can figure it out. They're like, no, we can figure it out. There's some shit called mutual aid that can help me weather this storm. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back to just talk about these tickets, man.
Ugh.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
Hey, hey.
Tickets. Who's got the ticket? I got tickets here. You need tickets?
Listen, that's kind of what we've come down to. If you, I don't know, have tried to go to a concert, a ball game, a film, you're aware of your options. You got your Ticketmasters and your Fandangos. And oftentimes, unfortunately, you are paying more for, you know, the website expenses than you are for your actual ticket. Sometimes twice as much. It is very challenging to purchase a ticket to go anywhere.
You can go ahead. It's fucked up.
It is fucked up, okay? It is difficult. And on top of that, y'all have sites that are just always crashing, okay? Marvel's Multiverse of Madness starring Doctor Strange, a.k.a. Benedict Cumberbatch, went on sale yesterday. And while Marvel fans, a.k.a. me, are excited to get their hands on tickets, we once again run into the ever-plaguing problem of crashed sites. And coming off Marvel's last release, which was Spider-Man No Way Home, created in partnership with Sony, and when considering the 20-plus years of online ticket sales, it's a devastating issue, okay? And it's the most important issue of our time, and we have to get to the bottom of it. Now, we can maybe forgive the Spider-Man crash, okay? Movies and, by proxy, ticket sales sites have took a huge, like, hurting during the pandemic, okay? We almost lost a lot of major theater chains. And, like, Spider-Man did eventually become the first pandemic-era release to break the 100 million opening weekend mark, which was great. It showed, like, sustained growth for the industry. And I understand that because we had taken a break, maybe people weren't expecting the ticket sales to be that high.
Right.
Bless. I totally understand. Several months after that, though, we are still dealing with Harry Styles pre-release tickets for Europe crashed Ticketmaster's website. And even other, like, smaller sites like Skiddle, which is a UK-based company. It's Skiddle, not like candy over here.
Okay.
You know, they received a lot of backlash when they were trying to promote a Fatboy Slim beach show. Crashed the entire thing. People were being, who had been in line for hours, were suddenly bumped back to like 76,000th place. It is not a sustainable business model. And when you consider the facts that the money that fans spend are not going to your acts, or even to the venues housing them, but mostly
like
to the corporation
fees.
Selling these tickets, it becomes very frustrating. Now, it's not, well, I guess I'll pause there. Are you guys, is it just me? Are you guys also experiencing ticket sales burnout? Are you enjoying the way tickets are being sold to you?
I mean, okay, like, to be honest, I've just been using the AMC app, and that seems to work pretty well.
No, it will crash day one. I spent 2 hours this morning trying to get tickets on my, because I have Stubbs, and I was like, I'm going to get my Stubbs points, okay, which means I get a free ticket, and I get all my points
but
from
buying
But you're
going for, like, a big release thing, right? You're saying, like,
that
for you,
true.
you're because you're trying to get that Thursday night.
Yes.
That Thursday night vibe. But Dana, are you even fucking with Thursday night vibes?
No, I'm like I'll go like Sunday 11 a.m. for like.
Okay, so I think we're dealing
but
with two different.
But I do need my Doctor Strange tickets, so I'll
got
get
you
those soon.
I respect those. They just went on sale yesterday. But I guess what was frustrating for me through the process of trying to buy through the AMC Stubs app, and they know because I reached out to them on Twitter. It's frustrating to be trying to purchase tickets. And I understand, like, they created a queue system, which they didn't have for Spider-Man. The site just crashed. You had to wait, like, a full, like, 5 or 6 hours, go back, try to purchase your tickets. They had a queue system, which I was excited about. They were like, in 2 minutes, you'll be able to buy your tickets. You'll have 10 minutes. And I was like, oh, they resolved the issue. Perfect.
Right.
I hop in line. I wait the minute. I go in to purchase the ticket. And it just kept coming up error. I was like, okay, maybe it's the app. Maybe the app can't support all the traffic. I'll go to the website. Exact same error pops up. Now, why in the hell do you have me in a queue waiting to join to purchase tickets if it doesn't work? And then on top of that, because the AMC app crashed when I went to Fandango, which does allow you to put your Stubs card in so you can still get your membership points, because the AMC app was crashed, it would not calculate my Stubbs card as being active because it can't tap into the AMC site to confirm the number.
Oh, God.
So then just start scalping.
Truly, it was hell. If you could scalp a theater ticket, I would. If I lived closer to the AMC, I would have just popped over there for a second and purchased them at the window. Unfortunately, I just paid price on Fandango. You can go, listen, for AMC members, you know, you can go in and have them retroactively attach it to your Stubbs card, I guess. But like three tickets is like $76. I'm not a parent. I'm sorry, parents, that you have to deal with this. This is so much money. But I also just think that we've been doing this for 20 years. 20 years of online ticket sales. Why is this not a resolved issue? Why can't you tell me to come back at like 3 o'clock, my spot will be reserved? You do it on the phone all the time. You're like, hey, we're just going to bounce back and call you in a minute when we have some time and available people.
They're not going to sort it out because, you like you're saying, they make too much money.
Well, already, they make so much money. I mean, like ticket resales are like a huge market. I mean, same with what we were talking about with like resale hype stuff.
Right.
It's like,
wait, what's the secondary ticket market look like?
Oh my God. Well, okay.
I mean, I know like Ticketmaster, but I mean
like, I mean, there's like StubHub. Right, there's right. Like,
oh yeah. Why am I acting like I don't know?
Even on Ticketmaster, like on ATX, it's like they have you have access to like the actual ticket prices.
Right.
But then like once those tickets sell out, then they have other people selling their tickets that they bought for market value for like 400, like 10x, like what they bought it for.
Yeah.
Like that's what I was looking for Lord tickets the other day. And like, you can't buy a Lord ticket for like under $600, but it's still through the main ticket website. And so I'm like, so like now it looks like ATX is charging $600, but it's like, they're not, but they are. It's just like, I hate it. It makes me so upset.
And this has been like a huge issue, like with especially concert tickets, about like this intermingling of the promoters, the ticket sales outlets, and how they are like only putting out limited numbers and having like basically controlling the market to their own benefit.
Mm-hmm. It's infuriating.
Yeah, we don't even have time to get into the like pre-credit card situation where like a lot of times credit cards will be like, we bought a bunch of tickets and to our exclusive members.
Oh my God, the American Express shit literally drives me insane. Although
my credit score is not good enough for American Express. They don't like me over there, but I'm coming for you so I can get these tickets. It's such a problem.
Right.
But my God. There's some hope. There's a website called TixR. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it. It's TIXR. And they've implemented what they're calling waitlist technology that enables those who've been shut out of live events to commit with a credit card to purchasing a ticket. So basically you're saying there's enough money on this credit card should an additional show become added to the schedule. Now, what I like about this is it shows both the artist and the venue how many more like shows you could potentially do. And it invites artists to say like, oh, hey, yeah, I will do a second show in this area if there's that many tickets sold. It goes through and automatically you're waitlisted immediately to join that second showing, which I think is a brilliant idea. Like if AMC wants to be like, hey, we have this many number of shows for this day, but if we have enough people committed, we'll just dedicate another theater. I mean, let's be honest, on a big opening night, you pretty much turn all of your theaters into whatever the Marvel or like big screening is anyway. So it just, things like that give me a little bit of hope just because I think it's become too much of an issue. You remember back in the old days, you could just walk up to a venue?
Well, what are the, fucking 92?
But in the old days, didn't people like camp out overnight? To me, I'm like, sure whatever this is easier than that.
Yeah. I remember my dad and I went to a Tower Records where there was a Ticketmaster desk to buy tickets to see UB40 and Us Three.
Wow. If
you remember their song Cantaloupe Island, that was like in every like shampoo commercial. Yes. But with that Tixer company, are they doing it with big acts or is it mostly small acts? Because I feel like that's the thing, that's the piece that has to come into place. I feel like if you're a big artist, you're probably doing your tour with like AEG or something like that, and they're already in bed. Like Live Nation or whatever, they have their way of distributing tickets. So I wonder if like it's going to take artists to say, I have to break away from this company to be able to even do business with something that's more equitable in terms of like ticket sales.
Yeah, they started with a large like weekend event for something called Dead and Company. So it's like, I think
Grateful Dead. Come on, you're not a
Is that the Grateful Dead? Okay, no, definitely
Dead
not.
Dead and Company is apparently a band that has old Grateful Dead members and new ones alike, including John Mayer.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So Dead and Company, like when you bought these tickets, you were not just getting tickets to the show, but also like housing and stuff like that. So the tickets were exponentially more expensive than like your average concert ticket. But mm-hmm. it sort of showed like that there is resources for this kind of maneuver. So I'm hoping that we can, at the very least, like we've just got done talking about how there's not a lot of competition and like a lot of these ticket websites, you know, I think especially Ticketmaster and Live Nation have a chokehold on the system. So I don't know how much competition there will be. And so maybe they'll never need to evolve. But it just seems to me, if I could have bought these tickets the same way in 2000, there should be a better system in 2022.
So we'd hope for, and we'll have to wait and see. But until then, I think we're going to be just at the will of these. I mean, really, the only other way is just to wait last minute and then find someone who's desperately trying to unload their tickets so you can get them at face value. That's typically what
I mean. But then it's like a huge game of chicken. Like,
it is. No.
Really, really
It high. Is. But you got to sometimes have the confidence of 1,000 Suns, like when I went to Coachella in 2009 for like,
I think Coachella is a really good thing to just like wait out, because like I know, I've seen so many Instagram stories recently that are like, I'm selling for $100 less than I bought it for. Like, who wants to go? Like, weekend two.
No, I'm waiting till the day of. Like, I'll come to you right now and I'll drop them off for $20. I'll pay you.
Please take it.
I'll give you $20. Just send me pictures. But anyway, Dana, thank you so much for joining us today on the Daily Zeitgeist. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Find you and follow you, see you, listen to you, and all that?
You can find me on Twitter at Dana Donnelly and at Bad Dana and Dana Bad. You can find me on Instagram at Hottest Dana. You can find me on TikTok at Hottest Dana.
Perfect. And also, the pod. You got the pod.
Subscribe to my podcast, Young Old, on YouTube and all podcast listening platforms. Come to my monthly show, Second Sundays at the Hotel Cafe in Hollywood.
There it is. And is there a tweet that you are liking, enjoying, that you want to share with us?
This tweet is by Biker Smooth at Biker_Smooth. And the tweet is, quote, I was bullied by everyone in school, end quote. Well, were you being weird? And I really identified that with that, because I was someone who was bullied by everyone in school, and it was because I was being weird.
Oh god, were you being weird? Joelle, thank you so much for joining me these last few days. Where can people find you and follow you, and what's a tweet that you like?
Y'all know me. I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet at Joelle Monique. It's JoelleMoniqueUE. Y'all, please come follow me. I have exciting podcast news. I can't share it yet. It's not ready, but it's coming. Lots of new stuff. Very excited about it. A tweet I'm enjoying is from rapper Plies, whom we love, who brings lots of comedy to the world. It says, what's crazy to me, ain't never seen Russell Wilson hate on nobody. Bro makes his money, takes care of his family, and minds his business. It don't get no realer than that. If you've seen a lot of these all men telling women how to get men that they would never date you in a million years in the first place podcast, was talking about how Russell Wilson is like weak and Sierra wouldn't be with him if he didn't have money, which is hilarious. That man loves her 10 toes down. You see it everywhere. He's constantly just praising Sierra, you know, and it's annoying to me because I think Russell Wilson, like, their relationship is fine already. You have to come to her. They're like, oh, she would still want to be with Future. No, she wouldn't. He's mean. He's very mean to her. Did you see how many songs he wrote when she left? Dumb. Like, if somebody's a sip, it's Future. 90 songs about how he's gonna get Sierra back and never got her back. Okay. Your child calls him daddy. It's not about, it's like, get over it. Anyway, shout out to Russell Wilson for loving a woman and still getting clowned about it. It's ridiculous.
Oh yeah. They, you know, people hate love, you know. It's those who don't have love that hate to see it the most. Let's see, some tweets that I like. First one's from Christina at Christina E. Cox tweeted, today, when introducing World War I, a student raised her hand and brought up the death of a certain Archduke. Nobody knew his name. So as a hint, I offered that he shares his name with a band. Gentle reader, my students asked if there had perhaps been an Archduke Metallica.
Dude, come on. I love the children.
But also, like, come on, you think the kids know Franz Ferdinand?
They don't.
They don't. They don't. Mm-hmm. They don't. I mean, I think that was a moment too when you realize how old we are first. Uh-oh. Melanie Linsky at Melanie Linsky tweeted, tried to throw a slightly neglected baby doll into the toy basket, and my 3-year-old shrieked, "That's my daughter." I had no idea.
I saw that this morning. That's so funny.
It's just the idea, like, yo, that energy of like, that's my daughter. You forget these toys, what they do to our childhood imaginations. And then last one, Lowell NUE, at Lowell NUE tweeted, my theory is every Gen X person read a Stephen King book way too young, and that's why they are the way they are.
Okay.
Spooked out kids reading Stephen King. You can find me at Miles of Gray on Twitter and Instagram. Also, check out the new podcast, Mad Boosties, the official NBA podcast Jack and I are doing. Talking about the basketballs and all that. Also, 420 Day Fiancé with Sophia Alexandra, if you want to hear me talk about 90 Day and all that reality tridash. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes!
Thank you. As long as you love me, we will be posting the song we write out on as well. And today's song, okay, this is a track that I was somehow, you know how like YouTube history like has almost like fucking everything you've ever watched?
Oh yeah.
I started scrolling back and just kind of like randomly like looking at shit I've looked at, and I remember I used to love this music video from 2007 from the EDM artist Armin van Helden called I Want Your Soul. But I loved it because this was like in that era before everybody was leaning into the 90s look so hard in the aughts. Like this was like on the precipice of like old hip hop looks from the 90s. This whole video is shot like it's like 1989 with like cross colors, overalls and shit like that. And the video is so dope. And the track's cool too, but I love the video. So this is the track I Want Your Soul by Armin van Helden. So check that out. Obviously, this here podcast is a production of iHeartRadio. So for more podcasts, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your shows. We'll see you later to talk about what's trending. And until then, take care of yourself. Bye.
Bye.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.